Well, hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to all of our Tenpenny Files premium members, where you can find the links to about 175 premium broadcasts that we've done over the course of the last year and a half. And you can find that by going to drtenpenny.com. During our deep dives, we have a conversation with our guests about what inspires them and find out a little bit more about what they are really doing and why. So let me introduce to you today's guest, Dr. Daniel Nagase. Dr. Daniel Nagase graduated from medical school in 2004. He's been a longtime emergency medicine physician in British Columbia and Alberta, Canada. He's recently risen to the attention of both alternative and mainstream media by exposing the connection between COVID shots and the steep rise in stillbirths across Canada in mothers who have been injected. He's also been very vocal about the connection between the shots and the rapid rise of cancer. We previously did interviews with Dr. Charles Hoff and Dr. Patrick Phillips, both Canadian physicians and both emergency medicine physicians who also have been attacked by the mainstream media and Canadian health officials for refusing to remain silent while they have watched their patients be harmed. You can find those interviews here at this, inside of the Deep Dive with Dr. T. And you, if you haven't heard them, you definitely want to hear them. You also will want to hear Dr. Hoff's interview that I did on Happy Hour with Dr. T, which is posted on Cloud Hub. Dr. Nagase, thank you. Welcome back to join us for this second conversation that we have on our deep dive here. Let's start with just something kind of simple and kind of easy. Where were you born and what was it like when you were growing up?
I was born in Vancouver, British Columbia, and that's about a medium-sized city, maybe about a third the size of Seattle would be the closest comparison. And I started off in North Vancouver, one of the suburbs, and then for school, I attended a different school. So then my parents moved to Vancouver. So I grew up initially in the suburbs, played a lot in the woods, and then, I grew up in the city, and then went to high school. I went to a special education program for enriched learning. So we had small class sizes, a lot of humanities and projects that were not a part of the standard curriculum. And then I went to McGill University for university. And then after that, Dalhousie, even further east, on the other side of Canada, for my medical school.
What made you decide to become a physician?
I love absorbing information, right? And I love problem solving. I just love thinking, right? Thinking, thought, the human experience. That's, listening to other people's stories, right? Because there's the experience you have in your life, and then you can expand your own experience by listening to the experiences other people have had with their life. So that blend of science and just, being able to broaden your own experience with the experience of others, I think that combination led me to medicine.
Why did you choose emergency medicine?
It seemed the most important.
Okay.
it's a very broad field. It's very exciting. And it's it just seems very it's just exciting. It's exciting, and it's not gazing perpetually at some tiny portion of the body and just problem solving, one system of the body. You really have to integrate knowledge of multiple different systems. And that's what I find enjoyable. It's, it's not knowing every little detail about the cardiovascular system. Rather, it's how the cardiovascular system interacts with the immune system, and how that interacts with the respiratory system and the nervous system. And and that complex conglomerate. Like the more the complexity, the more I enjoy working with it. So that's my kind of mental framework. I enjoy the puzzle. I enjoy the complexity.
You know, in my previous career, I was an emergency medicine physician. I was an ER doc for 12 years. I was the director of a level 2 trauma center for about half of those years. And, you know, we kind of have an expression. It's kind of ER, emergency medicine and general anesthesia. It's 90% routine and 10% sheer terror. You know, routine, sprained ankles, you know, minor lacerations, sore throats, pneumonia, you know, asthma attacks. And then you get the gunshot wounds and the car accidents and things like that. So, yeah, I can kind of relate to what you're saying about, you know, putting it all together in terms of the puzzles. You know, you mentioned in our previous conversation when we did the This Week with Dr. T that they have squeezed you out of being able to practice as a physician since September the 12th. How does that make you feel? I mean, where does that sit with you? I mean, I'm sure when you got that first letter, it was first happening. I mean, it must have been pretty terrifying. I mean, how did that make you feel when it started? And now several months later, how does that make you feel?
You know, it's actually been quite liberating.
Wow.
Because since this thing started, well, let me tell you. So I did a locum in a suburb in Alberta. It's about 45 minutes east of Edmonton. And it was about April in 2020. And everyone in the town said, oh, we already had this COVID flu. We all had it in November, December. There was this bad flu. It went through the entire town. Everyone got sick. Everyone got better. And that was the end of that. And the interesting thing is in April, no one in that entire county had any COVID. Like no one tested positive. And for the rest of the entire summer, when Edmonton was a red zone with thousands and thousands of cases a day of COVID, there was orange zones all the way around Lamont County, where there was hundreds of cases per day. Lamont County had nothing all summer, no cases, right? And it was this island of white where there's no cases, surrounded by islands of surrounded by orange and red zones. So really early on, it dawned on me, there is a whole other story going on with this. This didn't show up on North American shores in February or March like the official narrative stated, right? There was something else going on. And then, you know, as someone who enjoys puzzles, I keep looking, because you're not going to get the answer from mainstream media. So I keep looking through alternative media, message boards, and I'm trying to figure out, well, if it went through Lamont County in Alberta, which is kind of in the middle of Canada, in November and December, what was going on prior to that, right? And then, you know, I discovered the World Military Games that was held in Wuhan, China, and then, you know, you keep following this thread, this discrepancy, and you follow the discrepancy and you realize that this is everything that's being told on the news is false. There's a whole other agenda. There's a whole other process going on here. And the actual truth of the matter, you know, and then you keep following it. Event 201 and all the pandemic planning exercises involving the military, pharmaceutical, how they were going to expedite testing of you know, treatments and drugs and pharmaceuticals, using the excuse of an extremely urgent pandemic as the reason to push through and to cut corners or just simply avoid testing, safety testing entirely. So, and it's hard to be very vocal about that on a daily basis, you know, with workers, with colleagues, and they're like, oh, Daniel, you know so much, but really you're going off on the deep end. And I'm like, well, you can't tell me any of the stuff that I'm digging up is wrong, right? But they're like, oh, Daniel, right? Know too much. relax, just go along with everyone else. Don't have to change the world. Right? And that was me. You know, I enjoyed doing emergency medicine. I would have been perfectly happy just, you know, going to work, doing emergency medicine, and but then with this, ever since 2020, when it dawned on me that this is a false pandemic, then, you know, day-to-day work no longer satisfies me, right? I felt compelled to keep telling, you know, the nurses and other doctors I work with, there's something else going on here. Just look at this. Look at the economic issues. Look at when pensions are due, the insurance contracts for term life insurance. There's economic motives. There's political motives. There is a whole other agenda going on with this coronavirus so-called pandemic. And then, of course, when these injections came along, that's when, you know, I really felt compelled, like, oh, no, you don't want to take this. I know the health authority is saying, take this, but you want to wait. This is not good from a theoretical standpoint. And I did, you know, cell biology in undergraduate before medical school, and there's nothing good about this, right? So...
But when you said that them no longer allowing you to practice was liberating, can you expand on that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So then now all of a sudden I have a larger platform to you know, talk about the information I've gathered in the past 2 years. And you know, it feels good to speak. You know, there's something about truth that it holds the observer. You can't help but look at the truth, right? And when you speak the truth, it just moves the soul, right? And then you no longer feel like you are oppressed. You have to, you know, not be an anti-vaxxer because you don't want to be criticizing, you know, the vaccine too much at work, because then you'll be an anti-vaxxer. Right? And I'm like, well, this so-called vaccine deserves criticism. It deserves ample criticism because, you know, from its inception, the theory is all wrong. But no, it feels good. It's a reward that money can't buy.
Wow, that's pretty profound. I'm not sure most physicians would feel that way. So I'm grateful that you do. That is amazing, because you're right. I mean, you know, I've long used the expression, once you know what you know, you can't unknow it. And mm-hmm. once you see the truth, and once you've examined it, and you know that it's true. And I'm sure you know that, you know, I created 2 eBooks this last year, the 20 mechanisms of injury, how the COVID shots can make you sick or kill you. And then I found 20 more mechanisms of injury. And now I've found another 7. So now I'm up to 47. And it's like, there's nothing logical about any of this. There's it's all just sinister behavior and activity. You know, it's just, and we keep looking for some sort of a physical problem or physical solution to a spiritual problem of the people that have decided to take this shot and just feel like nothing's going to happen to them. If they didn't die immediately, well, I'm fine. Nothing's going to happen to me. But I've spoken to many immunologists who basically said, you've got 10 years to look over your shoulder, 10 years that for all of these things. And you know, there's like 4 or 5 cardiologists, several of them out of Canada, who've said, you know, in the next 3 years, the wave of deaths from all this cardiovascular disease is going to be massive. And that's in adults. And now that we're injecting children, it's going to be in children too. You know, in my own practice, I have a nurse that works at the Cleveland Clinic and in the cardiovascular unit. And she has personally known at least 2 17-year-olds that now have implantable defibrillators after having the COVID shots. A 17-year-old that has so much cardiac event irregularity that they have an implantable defibrillator. It's just unbelievable.
That's not supposed to happen with a brand new heart. That's a 17-year-old heart, that's brand new, right? this is a spiritual problem. And you know, since being put out of work, I've actually had a lot of opportunity to think philosophically, think spiritually. And one of the topics that came to mind, because in the province of Alberta, there's a very strong independence movement. It's kind of like the Texas of Canada, right? Where I know I pay attention to American politics as well, with things at the federal level in the United States, you know, going down the tubes, right? There's a movement in Texas and maybe even Florida that they need to, you know, reclaim their state rights, reclaim their sovereignty, and not be a part of the, you know, the federal corruption scheme of the federal government in the U.S. And there's a similar idea prevalent in Alberta, Canada. And one of the issues they wanted me to speak to was the idea of freedom. And it really led me to think, well, you know, what is freedom? What does freedom mean, right? And, you know, I realized you can't understand freedom and the reason why freedom exists unless you understand creation, right? And it was more of an imagination exercise for me, but it led me to discover a number of truths. So imagine for a moment that all of creation was automatons, right? You know, men and women who were just like robots, just did what they were told, had no free will, no freedom. And then what would the nature of a creator of automatons be, right? The creator of automatons wouldn't have to be reasonable, enlightened, truthful. Like all you'd need to control automatons is power, right? And so by definition, the creator of a world of automatons is a tyrant. You have no reason, no truth, no enlightenment, no love. It's just power. So that, imagine that kind of a universe. And then imagine, well, what if a creator was not a creator of automatons? What if a creator was better than that? Like, what's the best imaginable creator? Well, let's say a creator had reason, truth, light, enlightenment, love. What kind of creations would result from that kind of a creator? And if you think, well, the most enlightened creator a human mind can imagine is one that would create beings who have free will. Because if women and men have free will, you can't rule over women and men with just power alone. You actually have to use reason. You have to use love. You have to use enlightenment, right? And if you're ruling over, if you're governing creations that have that inner light of reason, then you have to use something greater than power to guide those kinds of creations. And those creations are us, right? Men and women. So the fact that we have free will, and it's a philosophic problem, because when men and women have free will, sometimes we choose ill. We choose to do bad. We don't choose, you know, reasonable things. We choose greed. We choose power. We choose things that are harmful. And that's the question is, why? Why do men and women have this choice to do evil? It's because that choice was given to us. It's a divine choice that within us, we all have, and this goes back to Plato's definition of justice. So Plato's particular definition of justice is that justice is excellence of the soul. So there's something that is innate in every woman and man that guides us, that we know in our hearts what is right or wrong. But for various reasons, we choose to do wrong instead of following that inner excellence, the justice inside our souls. And it's a very difficult thing to grasp that, you know, the world, like, we were created with this choice, because so many of the powers that be, you know, so many people use it to harm other people. And that's not what the Creator wants, right? The Creator wants us to use the reason that He's given us, to use the love that He's given us, use the very light of reason that's in each of our souls to choose right. But I suspect the nature of the Creator is not, the Creator's not there to make us do right. Because then you're not dealing with the divinity of enlightenment. The divinity of enlightenment is the Creator gives us the choice to do right. And that's a very big thing. It's like a parent, what would you want for your child? To control every single thing your child does? No, because then the child doesn't develop or grow spiritually or mentally, right? And that's what our Creator wants us, for us to make choices, to experience difficult choices, and to use the inner light that each and every one of us has to guide us to the right choice, to the good choice, to the divine choice. Knowing full well that, you know, man makes mistakes. Sometimes man makes horrid mistakes, like, you know, creating abominations like chimeras, mixtures of different species of viruses, and, you know, making these chimeras with the intent to kill, right? And, you know, the Creator knows this, right? The Creator knows that man makes mistakes, man chooses to use knowledge in bad ways. And, you know, if you, as an observer of the world, it's amazing how much forgiveness is built into creation. Because no matter how deadly a virus, chimera, whatever the original Wuhan strain is, it evolves to be less deadly, but more contagious, right? And that's built into God's world, that we can create something terrible, an abomination of nature, but it will evolve to be forgiving. It won't kill everyone. It will harm a lot of people, but after a few thousand generations, that virus will become milder, but more contagious. Unless man continues to make mistakes, continues to force mistakes. And I think that mistake that's being repeated over and over again is forcing these injections into the genetic environment. Because what we're doing with each of these mRNA injections is reintroducing the original Wuhan strain of genetic material with the more toxic version of the spike protein, and we're putting that into the environment. So even though, you know, nature's process, God's process, is to take that deadly Wuhan virus and turn it into a mild variant, we keep reintroducing the original deadly Wuhan RNA that can recombine with an attenuated milder virus, and then recreate the original Wuhan virus. That's Mendelian genetics. That's the genetic back cross. And we keep, you know, we keep repeating this mistake over and over again. And I can't imagine how, like, you know, as a parent, if you were watching your child repeat the same mistake over and over again, you know, you want your child to stop making that mistake, right? Stop fighting with their sibling over, I don't know, something inane like gummy bears or something. But unless you give your creations the opportunity to resolve their mistake, to grow from their mistake, then, I mean, that's probably the most divine thing you could want for that which you have created. And sometimes that's a painful process. Sometimes growing up, you know, making mistakes, suffering from mistakes, and then learning to do better, it's a difficult process. It's a hard process. But that's the nature of the world we live in. It's not just to be powerful. It's not to be rich. It's to use the inner light that you're born with to develop spiritually. And I, you know, that's kind of where I've come to so far with my thoughts about the origins of freedom. Like, where does freedom come from? It comes from a divine source. The idea of freedom is a divine idea.
That's beautiful. I mean, that's really beautiful. And I don't think I've ever heard anybody express it like that.
Yeah. And, you know, and so when I say it's been liberating, because, you know, it's given me the freedom to think through things and, you know, to observe the world around me. And it's so important for people to be honest, truthful observers of the creation that we all experience around us, because it's truly beautiful. It's amazing, right? And the times that the world around us seems ugly, it's always because man is doing something bad, right? And the question is, why do we have the choice to do bad? The choice to do bad is there because it's a divine choice, that the choice is there so that we can grow, that we can become enlightened, and we can get in touch with our inner angel, with our inner spirituality. You know, we weren't just created to just follow a path, right? We were created to become enlightened, to feel God, right? And I think that's, and the more I observe, the more it I feel like that's the nature of creation.
Well, it's what we need to get back to for sure, because, you know, we're fighting powers and principalities of this evil darkness, and we need to put on the whole armor of God and understand that what we're fighting is not just other human beings. But that deeper level of what you just said about free will and choice as an absolute gift of freedom, I think that's worth pondering. I think that that's something that is going to be very insightful to our listeners, to kind of think about what does personal freedom actually mean to each one of us on a sovereign and profound sort of level. You know, I'm doing this interview with you, and I'm seeing behind you, I see a guitar sitting on the sitting up there. Are you a musician? Are you a guitar player too?
Not a very good guitar player, but I play a little guitar, a little bit piano, a little bit bass guitar, a little bit drums, just a little bit of everything.
Mm. And do you use that for just for pleasure, or do you use it to for your meditation time, or for fun, or what do you use your music for?
Mostly for fun, just, you know, entertainment. And, you know, actually, I haven't played the guitar much at all, or the piano, for that matter, because I've just been so busy. But, you know, it brings up a topic. This is another thought that I was having over the past month. Why do people create, right? I mean, I've done road tours, you know, done speeches in welding shops, and it doesn't matter what line of work, right? You know, a welder can be welding pipe, you know, 8 hours a day, and then at the end of the day, he decides to weld a little bit of a sculpture with some scrap metal, right? It's like, he can't help but create something, right? You know, when I play the guitar, every now and then I can't help but come up with a little new tune or a riff that I've never heard of before. And, you know, visual artists, painters, they create, And it's like people can't help themselves but create new things no matter what walk of life they're in. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? Is this inner drive that people can't help but create things, is that because that's a reflection of the creation we were made from? It's like, how can you not be a reflection of that freedom to create that brought you into existence, right? It's already in your soul, and that's why it's unavoidable, right? It's built into your being that you have this desire to create. And I thought, wow, that's pretty profound. That like it says in the Bible, we are in the image of God, and that's why you can't help but know what justice is. You can't help but know what good is, and you can't help but create, because that was the mind in which you yourself were created. So I thought that was a nice thought, that it's a logical, spiritual, philosophical explanation for everyday phenomena.
That is. And again, that's really profound. I mean, again, I've done hundreds of interviews as either a guest or as a host, and I don't think I've ever heard anybody express it like that. That's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's been very liberating. Like, before, when I was just busy, occupied with being an emergency doctor and enjoying my work, I actually never took the time to contemplate the world at such a deep level until, I was out of work. And then it's really interesting. I can reanalyze things I've done in the past, based on this paradigm of freedom, right? Like, the first choice I had in that small town of Rimby was, I had a choice. Do I give ivermectin or do I not give ivermectin, right? If I don't give ivermectin, it's because I'm fearful of the provincial pharmacy director who sent me a stern email saying, do not give ivermectin for the treatment of COVID and COVID-19. And so then I had a choice between, making a choice based on fears, like, oh, I don't want to get in trouble, or do I make a choice based on reason, which is, I know how much of a benefit and how effective ivermectin is. So then, that was a choice, right? I have a choice to do evil or to do injustice, right? Not following the excellence that I have with the mind that's been given to me, or do I follow excellence, right? Which is justice in Plato's thought construct. So justice would be using the excellence that's born into me. So obviously I chose excellence. I chose to give ivermectin. And then the next choice I was faced with was, after I had all my shifts removed, right, and basically put out of work, I had a choice. Do I go to these unjust powers and beg for my work back? I'm really sorry for having given ivermectin, and, please let me be an emergency doctor again. That was one choice. And the other choice was to say, no, everyone should be getting ivermectin. This is completely unjust. This is irrational. This is, this is harming patients by not letting patients take ivermectin, right? So then I did have the choice between justice and injustice, right? And to me, that choice, even though I didn't know it at the time, that inner part of me just said, no, you have to speak out, because, you gave ivermectin, you cured 3 patients, but everyone needs to be able to use ivermectin just as I had to cure COVID pneumonias, right? And trying to hide under a rock and beg for your previous life back, well, that's not the best thing you can do. The best thing you can do is to speak out. And so that's why I'm here today.
Wow. Wow. Well, that I hope that you continue to spend more time in your deep philosophical thoughts. And I hope that you will spend some time writing that up, you know, writing it up as an article, or maybe it's the beginning of a book of journeys of how how I went from being an ER doc to a full-time philosophical thinker, and how getting rid of the old structures is not as scary as what people might think. I mean, all these people that are standing on the edge of saying, do I get the shot to keep my job? You know, maybe if they decided I was going to hold the line, because it does come down to what do you believe in and where do you draw the line after the first shot or the third one or the eighth one, or when are you going to say enough is enough? And hopefully there's more and more people that are holding the line on the first one. I'm not going to inject a genetic modification genetic modification technology into my God-given body. I'm just not going to do it. And if they, and I said yesterday, I was, Saturday. I spoke at a conference in San Diego, and I said, and I've said this frequently, I said, all you people think you need to, you know, you get the shot either out of fear or convenience, or so it's like, you think you have to get the shot to be able to keep your job. And it's the same job you've been complaining about for the last 20 years that you wanted to get a new one, you wanted to get rid of it, but yet you're willing to sacrifice yourself to keep a job with a paycheck that you've hated and wanted to get rid of for the last 10 years, you know? And usually when I say that in front of a crowd, there, a lot of people laugh because they know I'm right. They know I'm right. So maybe your this whole journey is just really the beginning of something really profound for you, Daniel.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing is I want to share it as with as many people as possible, you know, and you know, speaking to the spirituality, there's just something so wrong about rewriting the DNA that was created with such beauty and enlightenment, and spoiling it with, you know, with a genetic experiment, segments of RNA for, you know, spike proteins. And it's just so awful that it's been pushed on developing fetuses and children. It's a profound, profound evil. And, you know, sometimes those choices that, you know, women and men amongst us who aren't enlightened, who are seeking the path of the tyrant instead of the path of enlightenment, of, you know, being in touch with that which created you, I think, you know, we must overcome. And I think this is the lesson sometimes we have to periodically learn throughout time. The misuse of knowledge by man has deadly consequences. So,
yeah. Well, I think on that kind of pensive but yet positive sort of thought, that it is about free choice and it is about free will, and we can choose to do good. We can choose to go out and do things to try to help our fellow man and our, you know, humans and animals and just humankind. And it's a choice, that, you know, that connection between free will, freedom, and free choice is, it's all about free, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is there anything in, you know, this has been a really profound conversation this morning. Dr. Daniel, I've been so appreciative of your time here. I want to thank you so much for your candid disclosure and such a great and very meaningful conversation. So I'm both grateful and honored to learn so many things about you and who you are and who you are becoming, because you're at the beginning of this unfolding journey of doing something other than being an ER doc and going out and doing things for humankind. So I want to say thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to close with before we end our program for today?
No, I'm just so appreciative that there's people like you out there that can put these ideas that I come up with and share them, right?
Well, let's plan on this as you come up with more. Let's plan to do this again.
Yes, sounds good.
All right. So as we close out today, I want to say a special thank you to our premium members. Your monthly support makes this work possible. It allows me to travel to go to conferences and speak at various places. So thank you for your kindness and your patience as we rebuild what has been taken from us by Podbean and from PayPal, which has just been, if you're a business owner and you suddenly get PayPal taken away from you, it's not so much about accepting money. It's about being able to pay your bill. It's a real challenge. So we're putting all the pieces back together again. And I promise that our content, our podcasts, and our products will be better than ever before on the new drtenpenny.com site, which will be up and running by the end of the year. So while you're there, if you go over and you check out drtenpenny.com now and you look at the premium membership, be sure to sign up for our email list while you're there, because that's how we keep in contact with you about all the announcements about our special guests and our product promotions and things like that. So with that, I always like to close our either recorded or our live broadcast with one of my favorite verses from the Bible, which is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So until we meet again on the next broadcast, stay strong, trust God, he'll never let you down. So we'll see you next week. Dr. Daniel Nagase, thank you so much for being with us today, and thank you for all the work you're doing for humanity.
Thank you, Dr. Tenpenny.